Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Good afternoon, New England sports fans. Today, I dedicate this song to you.
Will you remember the famous man who had to fall to rise again? So take a deep breath. Pick yourself up. Dust yourself off. And start right over again.
Yes, take the great Ella Fitzgerald's advice, friends. Start all over again. That is what we'll do because, first of all, it's truck day, so you've got the Red Sox season to look forward to. Second, none of this melancholy self-recrimination.
Obviously, didn't do a good enough job coaching. Missed a lot of opportunities offensively in the first half. Didn't play good enough defense. Didn't play good enough in a kicking game.
Well, Bill Belichick's sad robot impression aside, the Pats head coach did at least acknowledge that his team was beaten by a great team, the better team last night in the Super Bowl. He was gracious, and we can be gracious about that. Right, Shira Springer, WBUR Sports and Society reporter who is still in Minnesota for us? Am I right? We can be gracious about this.
Yes, I'm all for graciousness.
Do you feel gracious, though, after last night's loss?
I feel cold mostly.
Okay. All right. Well, stand by, cold Shira Springer, because I also want to welcome in our continuing act of graciousness, J. Scott Smith, reporter and producer from WHYY in Philadelphia. Welcome, Jay. And by the way, congratulations, you guys.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you very much. It has been a surreal, needless to say, last, I'm not even sure if it's 24 hours, maybe 18 hours here in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection.
Has Philly recovered from celebrations and festivities last night?
I think some people are still celebrating. I'm still kind of a little wobbly right now myself. I normally work mornings here, so coming in this morning was an adventure, needless to say, but it was a good kind of tired. It's the best way I can describe it right now. It's a wonderful feeling to be here in Philadelphia today after all this.
Well, you guys definitely earned it and deserved it. But let's still do a little bit of post-game here, Shira, because, I mean, you were there, you saw the whole game. What do you think went wrong for the Patriots?
Well, first of all, can we please start with the Patriots' defense?
Yeah.
It just simply didn't seem to show up. They couldn't slow down Nick Foles, the Philadelphia quarterback, which is was inconceivable. Nobody thought that would happen going into the game. Let's not forget that Nick Foles was the backup, only I think something like 7 or 8 weeks ago. Carson Wentz, the starter, went down with a torn ACL in December, and Foles stepped up, but he had been this kind of inconsistent starter. So the big question going in was, which Nick Foles will show up? And I don't think anybody expected it was going to be a guy who threw for 3 touchdowns and caught another on a trick play. So I think defense was a big part of it. Another thing that sticks out.
Well, actually, can I just jump in here for a second?
Sure.
Because you're talking about defense. And Jay, I'm going to come back to you about Nick Foles here. But Malcolm Butler, right? I mean, there's this controversy about why he was benched by Belichick. No one from the Patriots seems to be talking about this. But Butler said,
shockingly,
they gave up on him. And he says he could have changed the game.
Yeah, I think he could have. I mean, when things weren't going your way, why didn't you at least try to put Butler in? That's the question that everybody was asking post-game. It was completely puzzling as to why he didn't make an appearance. And, the coaching staff was asked, was it because of a disciplinary reason? And they all said, nope, matchups and packages. But it just doesn't seem to ring true. And, of course, the conspiracy theorists are out there, but when things weren't going the defense's way, you would have thought that Belichick and Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, would have at least tried to do something different, put in different personnel, try different matchups and different packages, and use Butler, but they didn't.
Well, so Jay, let's get back to Foles that Shira was heaping deserved praise on. I mean,
Super Bowl MVP?
Yeah. What's your take?
That is true. Oh, the story of Nick Foles is the type of thing that you make movies out of. to be honest with you. It was December 10th, and I can tell you the atmosphere here in Philadelphia on the morning of December 11th was half shock, half mourning because of what happened to Carson Wentz, because Wentz gets hurt third quarter of the game in Los Angeles. He's hurt and then ends up scoring a touchdown shortly thereafter, and there was already talk amongst people of trying to figure out a way for Wentz to play the rest of the season on one leg because they were that scared of what would happen of the alternative, because Nick Foles, while he was a pretty good quarterback his first stint here, it didn't end well initially for him, and he was just seen as his journeyman. But he's brought back in, and this team got behind him more so not just off of the game that he finished in Los Angeles, but when they went to play the New York Giants the following week, and he threw four touchdown passes, and that team got behind him. And Foles is just this inspirational story. He's a very mellow guy. He's gone through going back to when he was in college at Michigan State University. He initially starts there. He doesn't get any playing time, goes University of Arizona, then comes into the league and is initially brought in, and he goes through this circuitous route between the Eagles to Kansas City to St. Louis and now back in kind of a redemption tour, a last shot to be a journeyman QB. Now he's the Super Bowl MVP, having played three of the best games of his life. And last night, where you mentioned, he's the first quarterback in the history of the Super Bowl, 52 Super Bowls, and there's never been a trick play that saw a quarterback catch a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
And they do it in such a gutsy fashion right there when they felt that they felt that snowball coming, that everyone who's watched the Patriots, they know that's a snowball coming down the hill when they get rolling. And for him to run that play, and to do it to perfection where Foles is wide open, it felt special to see that. It just blew me away to see that kind of a moment where a guy like Foles, who's so calm and so poised under pressure, it's almost as if he just was kind of playing it almost outside of his own body. And to have a night like that on a stage like that, it shocked a lot of us in Philly. If it sounds like I'm kind of caught off guard by this, I am a little bit. I knew Foles was decent, but I never knew he was going to go out there and just be lights out.
I'm going to jump in here because for a second, it's starting to sound like Radio Philadelphia here at Radio Boston.
Well, I was going to add to that. It's so mind-blowing that, you know, I mean, this was a guy who was going to leave the game, was going to retire in 2015. I mean, he was done with football. He had lost his passion for the game. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, while we're talking about catching touchdown passes here, for the uninitiated amongst us, what was that big to-do about, is it a catch, isn't it a catch, for that Eagles touchdown in the fourth quarter? I don't get what happened, Shira.
Well,
Jay, go ahead.
How much time do you have? I think we're about to say the same thing. This has been going on for almost a decade now in the NFL. I'm originally from Detroit. My team is the Detroit Lions. And it all started with Calvin Johnson in Chicago 10 years ago, where it seemed like he caught a touchdown pass, but as every part of his body hits, he puts the ball on the ground and takes off to celebrate, and they ruled it an incomplete pass. And the NFL ever since then has been trying to figure out what a catch is. Last night, the confusion was over whether Zach Ertz, who catches the touchdown pass, was still in the act of catching the ball or in the act of running the ball, because we don't know what a catch is. The confusion was whether or not he lost control of the ball beforehand as a receiver, or he lost control of the ball after he scores as a runner, which you would think he caught the ball, took three steps, came across the goal line, lost the ball, caught it. It was any other time that's a catch. But now in today's NFL, you have to basically examine this thing like the Zapruder film and see, let's just make sure that this thing counts as a catch. I didn't think it was not a touchdown when I saw it, but people were having the bad flashbacks at the end of the Patriots-Steeler game a couple of months ago where the tight end for the Pittsburgh Steelers has a similar play ruled incomplete, and that started the That starts all the consternation and the fear, but it's because the NFL can't seem to define a catch.
Sure, I was going to say that some people seem to be commenting that it's very 2018 for a catch to maybe not be a catch in the NFL.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the big talk of the league this year. I mean, I think Goodell, in his State of the League press conference, devoted 5 or 6 minutes to discussing how they are going to revisit the catch rule or the catch-no-catch rule and sort of start from scratch to determine what a catch is. I mean, it sounds a little bit ridiculous when we're talking about it, because this is kind of like a pass-happy league. I mean, passing and catching is sort of fundamental to football. You'd think you'd kind of figure out or have it figured out what exactly constitutes a catch, but they haven't, and it's become overly complicated. It's bogging down the game. It's turning off fans, or more accurately, frustrating fans. This has been a debate for a while, will continue to be a debate in the offseason. But I have to say, you know, credit the Patriots. When they were asked about the play with Ertz, they said, you know, listen, to us it looked like a catch. I mean, even Danny Amendola is saying, you know, they called it a catch, 3 feet down, a football move. I'd call it a catch.
Yeah.
So I think on the field, the players knew, yeah, this is a catch. This is a touchdown. Let's move on.
Well, Shira, stick with me because I want to focus a little bit more on the Patriots here. But J. Scott Smith, reporter and producer for Morning Edition at WHYY in Philadelphia, congratulations to Philly once again. It was a great game, well-deserved win, and I hope you guys ride this high for a long, long time. Congratulations.
We greatly appreciate it, and I will say that I think we have an understanding now of what it felt like in Boston 14 years ago when the Red Sox ended the infamous streak, and now you have a nearly 60-year streak. And here in Philadelphia, it's a wonderful feeling, and it was a pretty wild evening, to say the least. I'll put it that way.
It's like an out-of-body experience for sure. J. Scott Smith, thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay, so Shira, I wanted to talk with you specifically about some Pats things and about the broader issue of injuries in youth sports here. But let's talk about Rob Gronkowski for a second, because after the game, he was asked if he was considering retirement, and he didn't deny it. Here's what he said.
But I mean, I'm definitely going to look at my future, for sure. I'm going to sit down the next couple of weeks and see where I'm at.
Your thoughts, Shira?
Yeah, this was the most unexpected comment to come out of the post-game availability for the Patriots players, in my opinion. I mean, in some ways, it's hard to believe he's serious. He's 28 years old. He clearly loves the game. He's one of the most feared tight ends in the league. He's really obviously difficult to match up with because of his size and athleticism. But you're right. He didn't deny it. And, you know, if
I mean,
you
does
look
this have to do with,
his,
like, his, you maybe you're just getting to this, but I was wondering if this
to
has
the injuries.
To, yeah, his injuries,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, exactly. I was going to say, if you look back on his career, he's rarely been healthy. He has not played a full 16-game season since 2011, and that includes injuries to his arm, his knee, his back. So you have to think there is a part of him, especially in light of the fact that he also suffered a concussion
right.
in the AFC Championship game, which has him thinking about his long-term health. You know, he's 28 now and probably aching every day because of past football injuries. Where will he be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? And I have to wonder, I mean, he isn't saying this, if the concussion suffered in the AFC Championship game made him just think, hey, after this season, I've got to just sit down, take a step back, and reevaluate. Obviously, if he leaves, it would leave, you know, retires, it would leave a gaping hole in the Patriots' offense. And it's not about money, I think, at this point for Gronkowski. It's about the love of the game, or at least you'd like to think that. But it's also probably worth noting that he has 2 years and $17 million left on his contract.
Okay, so that'll be part of the deciding factor as well, then.
I think so.
Well, I mean, since we're talking about injuries, Shira, just this weekend in the Boston Globe magazine, you actually had a really interesting article calling for the United States to build a sports injury database for high school and college athletes who play contact sports. Now, tell me more about this.
Yeah, it's actually something I'm really passionate about. I believe, you know, if we really want to make games safer for youth, high school, and college players, we need more data. We need more accurate information about the type and severity of injuries that they are suffering. And I'm not just talking about concussions. I'm talking about everything from a pulled hamstring to a broken nose to concussion. So I think you need that data to make good policy. Without it, in the story, I equated it to, you know, the sports equivalent of putting the cart before the horse. You know, if you make policy without good data, you're going to get somewhere, but you're never going to get as far as you want or need to with regard to making contact sports safer. So I really think we need to have a national database that is centralized, standardized, and required for schools and youth leagues to report their injuries.
Well, I mean, do I have this right that we do at least know that on average 650,000 high school and college athletes who play contact sports have on average 650,000 more injuries a year than athletes who play non-contact sports?
Yeah, we do know that. And that's because a Yale economist named Ray Fair undertook a study where he looked at the difference between contact sports and non-contact sports when it comes to the number of injuries and also the medical care costs. And the medical care costs, there's a wide range, but it's in the billions of dollars, you know, the extra costs that contact sports incur. Because of the medical care you need to treat those injuries.
Now, you know, when I hear your call for more data, right? Because, you know, you can't make sound decisions without some data, at least. But I wonder, I mean, say we got lots more data from collecting information about injuries, though. I mean, could that lead to, I don't know, parents pulling their kids out of these sports, not because they got injured, because of their fear of this now quantifiable risk that they have? I mean, could it lead to some downsides like that?
So I think, in some cases it may lead to parents pulling their kids out of sports. It may lead to parents whose kid has suffered an ACL tear or multiple concussions lead them to keep their kids out of contact sports. But really what I would like to see come of it and what I would envision coming of it is just better policy. So we're already hearing talk with research and more data about concussions and subconcussive hits that kids under 14 should not play tackle football. I think there's room to have more regulations like that, where you set different age limits about when you can engage in contact sports or play contact sports, and that can come out of the data.
Mm. Well, Shira Springer is WBUR Sports and Society reporter. We've got a link to her piece about calling for a database for high school and college athletes and their injuries to be logged in this database. It's really interesting, so I suggest you all go to radioboston.org, find a link to it there, and read it. Shira, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.
And come back to Boston soon, okay?
Yes.
It's not that much warmer here, but a little bit warmer than Minnesota. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.